Hello, and welcome to Should I Love This Comic? My name is Damien Drouet-Whiter, and with me I have...
Ira Gale Drouet-Whiter.
Oh, very exciting. We're here again together. And we're once again doing Should I Love This Comic? And at the moment we're looking at Should I Love This Era? Looking at the 25th anniversary comics by Marvel Comics that came out, cover dated November 1986. Mm-hmm. So today we're looking at Conan the Barbarian 188. Mm-hmm. Two fat ladies at the end there. Mm-hmm.
Which will mean nothing to American viewers.
Well, they must play bingo in America. No. Okay, which had the plot and script was by Christopher J. Priest, who was writing as Jim Owsley. We've already had a discussion of Jim Owsley changing his name when we did the Spider-Man stories. The plot was co-plotted and the layout art was done by John Buscema. Finished art was by Ernie Chan. The letters were by Janice Chang. The colours by George Roussos, and the editor was Larry Hammer. The cover main image is drawn by John Buscema, and the border, like all the others, is by John Romita Sr. And the whole cover was coloured by George Roussos, and there was a logo designed by Gaspar Saladino. So they're all the people we're going to talk about today. Now, we normally start with a bit of a discussion of what was going on behind the scenes at Marvel at the time. But actually, this is another one, like last episode, actually, where we're talking about a comic that wasn't created in a controversial backdrop. Mm. You know, stuff was going on at Marvel, but it wasn't affecting this comic. Mm. This was a stable editor who had writers and artists who'd been working on that series for quite a while. John Buscema is soon to leave, but actually, it's been quite stable. He's going to leave... in part because they haven't got an artist for Fantastic Four, so he goes over to that, which we talked about in our first episode of this part.
We did.
Yeah. The Fantastic Four just lost its editor to DC. Not its editor, had just lost its writer and artist to DC Comics. And because of that, they were looking for someone new and they took John Buscema. And when you try and look into what was going on behind the scenes in Conan at this point in time, there's very little written. There's more written about stuff that happened earlier, particularly when Roy Thomas left, who was the writer from the original issues, all the way up to about 110-ish. And there's a lot more stuff. There's some stuff written about the end of Christopher Priest's run on Conan, and when he felt he was kind of like pushed out of Marvel. But at this point, you're kind of mid all that, so there's nothing really going on that we're hearing about. Yeah, and that's it, really. I mean, maybe something that is a part of it is one of the things that came up in the Carl Potts episode when we were talking about Alpha Flight, which he edited, is that Larry Hammer was another person who came from outside of comics or outside of Marvel to be an editor at Marvel. So, you know, Jim Shooter seems to have trusted those people more than the people whose first job was... as an assistant editor at Marvel, and then they work their way through, he would kind of monster them more than the people who've done other things. And Larry Hammer is a very interesting character. You know, he was a writer, an artist, he was an actor, and I know the thing you'd be interested in, darling, is that he was in Pacific Overtures on Broadway. Yeah, he's a Japanese-American man, but born in America.
Larry Hammer. Okay.
Yeah, very interesting guy. Lots of interesting stuff about him. Again, most of the stuff you find when you look up interviews and stuff is about his two big runs he's most famous for as a writer, which are G.I. Joe. He wrote that from the first issue to pretty much the last issue while it was at Marvel.
Okay.
And then went back to writing the more modern versions. And he also had a very long run as the writer of Wolverine, which is slightly later than this. I think that starts about 1991. So obviously we're at 1986 here.
Oh, he died.
No, Larry Hammer hasn't died. Oh. Oh, it's not spelt Hammer like Hammer House of Horror.
Oh, is it?
It's H-A-M-A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Uri Geller is Googling Larry Hammer as we speak. But let's just go through the story very quickly so we can talk a bit more about what was going on in this story. And the story is called The Killing Season. General Shapur's grandson, Jarlie, is now king. His mother, Annika, had sent him away to stay with a maid rather than be at the castle. The assassins were able to kidnap him. Conan and his companions are trying to help find Jarlie. Keeve is the confidence trickster. Simeon, the muscle, and Caleb is a man of peace, constantly battling the destroyer within. They all arrive at the maid's hovel and find it deserted. General Shapur tells his daughter not to give up hope, but Conan bluntly tells her that her son is probably dead, but he will find the man responsible and make him pay. Suddenly, an army of assassins runs out of the house to fight Conan and his friends. They easily beat them back. Conan is going to kill the last one, as he is child-killing scum, and gets Simeon to take him into the woods. Simeon takes the assassin's gold and tells him he'll let him go if he pretends to best him. Help! I've been attacked! Violated! The whole thing was a plan by Conan. The assassin is running back to his master's lair, and they can follow him, but Conan insists that he should go alone. In the deserted tavern of the border village, Ibin, the leader of the assassins, is meeting with the Devourer of Souls. The Devourer gives Ibin one more day to kill Conan. Just then, the assassin who escaped from Conan arrives. Ibin kills him as he knows he will have led Conan to the tavern. Conan wants Jarlie's body so he can have a proper burial, and Ibin says he'll bring it with him to the arena at midnight. Back at Castle Madoc, Conan's friends discuss the fact that Conan is going to meet Ibin alone. Simeon thinks he must have a secret plan, but Keeve knows Conan keeps no secrets. He's as direct as sin and death. General Shapur has promised not to interfere, but he also knows Conan is walking into a death trap. At midnight, Conan enters the arena alone. The Devourer of Souls is impressed. He fears nothing. Such a soul is difficult to kill. Ibin lights up the arena and sends an army of assassins against Conan. They are faced by Shapur, Keeve, Simeon, and Caleb. Conan is proud of his compatriots for disobeying direct orders. They fight, but Conan has only one quarry. He is going to kill Ibin, and he's going to enjoy it. Ibin taunts Conan. The boy is dead. I killed him myself. I enjoyed killing him myself. And do you know the best part, Conan? The whelp was right under your feet all along. Conan kills Ibin so savagely that the troops think he's gone mad. The Devourer of Souls departs. Conan cares little and ignores everyone. He rushes back to the house, realizing that the body must be in the basement. He cuts Jarlie's body down and cradles him. That's the end.
promises, you know he cannot keep. He made me pick him up, now we won't pay for gasoline. He's drinking all my beer, he's wearing all my clothes. And if he winks at me again, I think I'll take him home. There's a barbarian in the back of my car.
So quite a,
yeah,
kind of a classic adventure story, which is what Conan is, I suppose. So we normally talk about these stories in terms of some topics that we score on.
Yes.
So this one's a bit different to some of the others, which I maybe should have said in the introduction bit. But generally speaking, these are comics that I love that I'm introducing to you.
Yes.
And this one is one that I never received. For some reason, when I used to go into the newsagents for my Marvel comics, I never saw Conan comics.
Oh.
Now, I don't know if they didn't get distributed as much, or maybe somebody else was getting to the newsagents first and getting all the Conan ones, so I never saw them. But I never saw this at the time. I recently bought it as a back issue, a very battered up back issue. Got it quite cheaply, thankfully. But it is one I didn't read at the time. So to me, this is as new to me as it is to you. And the entire set of characters, apart from Conan himself, I've read a few other Conan comics. They've always got Conan in them, obviously. And Conan is the character he is. He's a force of nature, almost. He's a barbarian amongst more, you know, civilized people. I'm kind of doing air quotes here. Who's like a fighter, and he's direct. But I didn't know any of these other characters. So the first thing that we score this for, normally out of five each, is accessibility. How good is it for a first-time reader? And normally I'm guessing, because I'm trying to remember being a first-time reader. Did I understand who the characters were, etc.? This time I'm not. I am a first-time reader. What did you think for accessibility on it, darling?
I thought it was quite I thought it was quite easy to remember the plot, who was who, mainly because everybody had like a very distinct look.
Yeah, they're definitely all the characters, the main characters, the friends, have very significant physical looks. They're very, they're not caricatured. I was going to say caricatured, they're not. They're quite naturalistically drawn, but they're very different from each other.
So people like Nim or Sim or Blim or the one without any A-E-I-O-U's in his name, the three
letters. Ibn.
Yeah, Ibn.
The master assassin or the leader of the assassins.
So you kind of knew who he was every time.
He's much older than any of the other characters, isn't he? And he's kind of craggy and he's got a little hat on.
The destroyer, chappy.
Oh yeah, there's, I've got him written down as the destroyer of souls and the devourer of souls.
Okay.
So I don't know if I got that wrong or if he's called both in the comics. So I'm going to have a quick look. There you go. You can hear rustling of someone turning pages on a comic.
Quickly.
Yes. So he's introduced as the devourer of souls. Is he called that throughout? Yes. So he is the devourer of souls, not the destroyer of souls. And he's got a very distinctive helmet design. It's something that's kind of worked very well in silhouette, which is used a lot for him. And he's very mysterious in the story. He doesn't do very much. He threatens Ibn that he will kill him if he doesn't do what's going on. But he's clearly the big bad. And I actually, because yesterday you asked me when we read it, you asked me if these characters were in a lot of Conan books, and I didn't know. So I had a look online, and I was looking at like various different sites where people index comics, and they say which characters are in them and stuff. And basically, this group of characters entirely are in pretty much every issue to issue 200.
Oh, okay.
So this is issue 188 till issue 200. They're all in it. Okay. Beyond that, some of them are and some of them aren't.
Okay.
You know, it continues. But he's definitely the big villain. He's the big villain, that Devourer of Souls.
Right.
He's the villain on the cover of issue 200.
Okay.
Who Conan is finally battling there.
Okay.
So my impression, and I do not know because I've not read these comics, but my impression is he's kind of the background baddie who's behind the other baddies.
Yeah.
Eventually, he's going to have to buy... He's like the big boss, like the final baddie.
And I guess there's... like anything where you go into a story mid... or more than mid story, you kind of wonder why the Destroyer of Souls has got it in for Conan. So I guess, but as a standalone story,
yeah, it's very much about the revenge for that dad.
Yeah,
and you've got this you know that the kid who'd become king is the grandson of this general who's the army general.
Okay.
And his mother's there very briefly. Not the mother of the general, the mother of the boy who's missing at the beginning. And obviously, Conan and his friends were meant to be protecting him.
Has she had an affair?
Yeah, that was like the backstory. It was explained quite quickly in the first couple of pages.
Yes.
That, you know, she'd had an affair with the previous king, and her son was therefore the next king. But her son had never even known this himself and didn't understand why people were trying to kill him.
That wasn't explained, was it?
Yeah, that's mentioned.
Was it?
It's all within, like, one line of dialogue, by the way.
Okay, yeah.
On, like, page 3 or something. It's very brief. But, yeah. But that's what you say about accessibility. They explain who these characters are.
Yeah, very quickly.
They explain the missing kid is the new king. That Conan and his compatriots are looking out for him.
Mm-hmm.
You have General Shapur talking to his daughter, Annika, about... his grandson, her son, who's missing. And he's like, there, we'll find him, we'll go and find him. And you get Conan saying, no, he's definitely dead. These are assassins, they'll have killed him. But we can find his body so you can get a burial and we can revenge him.
So instantly
you get the fact that Conan is very blunt, he's very direct. There's no tricks or stuff with him.
So what does Conan get out of it, then?
It's not directly said in the story, but my understanding of Conan stories I've read is there's a big thing about honour, and it's very, like, old-worldy, legendy.
Yeah.
As I say, I've never read the Robert E. Howard books. Conan comic books.
Yeah.
But I don't know a lot about it, but he's a... He's a moral character with a very specific morality. And it's very force of nature, and it's very, like, good is good, bad is bad.
Yeah, you get
that. Not that much grey area, I think. And his motivation is he intended to protect this kid, because he's a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing that is motivating him all the time, when he fakes, like, a berserker rage to make the... guy, one of the assassins, lead them back because he's so scared.
Yeah.
It's like, is that fake or is he that angry? He keeps talking about child killing scum.
Yeah.
There's a real thing about killing children, you know, doing something to children. Conan is not always good in certain ways. You know, he can be played as being a villain a bit. He steals sometimes. He's, you know... He's not moral in that sense, but that's our ultimate morality.
So can you, sort of going slightly left field here, having just read Mr. Hammer's wiki page, there's a whole section where he went to Vietnam and how, so, you know, then he was involved in a magazine called The Nam. Which was
coming out just after this. It started a couple of months after this.
Okay.
And he was the editor who launched it. There was definitely...
a moral.
Vietnam, I think, is anything that deals with war in any shape that's released in the 80s is affected by Vietnam. You know, there are movies about the Second World War that almost tell you more about Vietnam than are made in the 80s. It is the nature of the culture at the time. You know, and the fact that the people who were making the culture, a lot of them were Vietnam veterans.
He was, yeah.
And if they weren't, if they were a bit younger, like Christopher Priest, who was the writer,
Right.
He would have been too young to be a Vietnam veteran.
Mm.
But his youth would have grown up with this expectation that he would end up going to Vietnam.
Mm.
Because there was conscription.
Mm.
You know, and I think this does have a... It colours things.
Mm. Mm.
And I think all American culture of the 80s, I think particularly in the 80s, is coloured by the fact that they just come out of Vietnam.
Mm.
Which they hadn't just. I mean, it was about 10 years behind.
Yeah.
But it's a huge thing culturally.
Mm, mm.
And I think, you know, it really does come out in some ways. Mm.
So the killing of children.
I think killing of children is seen as an ultimate thing. But then I suspect that's something you would find in the Robert E. Howard books.
Yeah.
Which I think, again, I'm not an expert on this and I haven't investigated in a long way. But I think they were written like 30s, 40s, you know, and then other people continued it on. And they continued releasing, they do new Conan novels now. Mm. But this kind of morality play was in it all along. Mm. There were certain things that were wrong with a capital, you know, W.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were other things that, you know, oh, he's a bad guy, but he's really good. You know, I suppose it's like the male equivalent of the hooker with a heart of gold, isn't it? Kind of thing.
Mm.
But not only do you kind of get what Conan's doing in there, where you're saying, well, why is he motivated?
Mm.
You get the motivation of the other characters, and it's very quickly given to you.
Mm.
There's a very quick bit where you see each character. I think it's on page three or four.
Mm-hmm.
There's like this one, there you go, that page. It is page three.
Okay.
Where they do the three characters
yeah.
who are with him. Keeve, Simeon, and Caleb.
Mm.
And they're described, and it also says how they're reacting to what Conan's saying. So Conan said, he's dead, but we will get revenge.
Mm.
And they're all wondering about, is it because of this or because of that? And they tell you who they are.
Mm.
Obviously, you see them, they're very different physical types.
Mm.
And you do know who these characters are. And this is page three.
Mm-hmm.
So within three pages, and the first page was just a splash page of Conan kicking in a door, you know who all the characters that matter are.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen the villains yet, but they're coming very quickly. And you know why they're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were at the castle. They were responsible for this boy.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, it's mentioned... The mother didn't quite trust them, probably because they're wanderers, they're all from different places, they're outsiders.
Mm.
So she thought, oh, I'll send him off with a maid, one of the maids can look after him at her house.
Mm.
He can pretend to be her son. And I presume that's what happened, it isn't described in any detail.
Mm.
And he gets, like, kidnapped or he disappears in this situation.
Mm.
And it is, you know, it's all set up very clearly.
Mm.
I mean, for me, I gave accessibility a 5 out of 5 because I've not read these comics, but I knew who these characters were.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what motive... I mean, in that page three thing, there's quite a lot of words on the panels.
Mm.
And it's quite useful that Janice Chang, the letterer of this comic, letters quite small.
Right.
Which, I mean, I know we both had to get on our reading glasses to read this comic because she does letter very small. But there's a lot of words there. It tells you very succinctly the motivation of these three characters, which is essential if it's your first issue. You know, you can be in the middle of a continuing story, but if you tell us, who is this character, what are they doing? So we instantly get, you know, Keeve is kind of the trickster. He's the one who's got a plan, who's like sneaky and all that kind of thing. You've got Simeon, they call him Mad Simeon, which is... maybe something we'll discuss when we talk about things that are stuck in their time. But he is, like, aggressive, and he's the fighter, and he's very direct. And then you've got Caleb, who's kind of like a monk, who's also a fighter. Caleb the Destroyer, and this idea of he's very holy, and he wants to be a good person, but then he's a fighter, and it comes out naturally. And apparently, from looking at those... You know, I said I looked into, like, descriptions of following issues... That becomes a central part of the story. The idea of this Caleb, he's a destroyer, but he's also a monk. That, like, takes centre stage later on. But, you know who these characters are. You know who Conan is. You very quickly know who Ibn, the I mean, he's a caricature in many ways, but he's the lead assassin. He is just evil incarnate.
Mm.
You know, and he's working for someone who's almost a force of evil. The devourer of souls, who seems like he's not even human.
Mm.
Again, I haven't read a lot of Conan stories, but I know magic is a big part of the Conan world. And I'm guessing he's a character of magic. I mean, he drives. He rides on a winged horse. So that implies that. But yeah, accessibility, I gave it 5 out of 5. What would you have given it?
I would give it 5 out of 5 as well.
Yeah. Mm. I think it was very strong on accessibility. Mm. You knew who these characters are. You knew why they were doing what they were doing. It didn't matter that you hadn't read another Conan story before.
No.
You could just read it. In many ways, I think you said it was a very traditional, like, I can't remember the phrase you used, but it's kind of a bit like an action movie or something.
Yeah, it's very clear,
you know, it's like good guys, bad guys, this has happened, they're going through the battles.
Mm, mm.
Everything's very clear, in some ways incredibly traditional.
Mm,
mm. Which again is interesting when you consider who made it.
Mm.
I think, you know, the fact that it's one of the most diverse creative teams that we have.
Yes, that's
in any of the comics we've looked at, the fact that the writer is a black guy in his 20s.
Okay.
The artist is Italian-American.
Mm.
And would have been a bit older. He was probably in his mid to late 40s by this point.
Mm-hmm.
No, he must have been older than that. He was working for Marvel in the 40s.
Mm.
He could well have been edging 60 by then. Okay. I think he was very young when he worked for Marvel in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the inker, I think, was about is Filipino. The letterer is Chinese American. Colorist, George Russo's, yeah, Italian American. And the editor, obviously, we know, Japanese American.
Mm.
The assistant editor's a woman, which is unusual in comics at the time.
Okay.
So there's a lot of, you know, there's like a Chinese American woman, there's an American woman, there's lots of different influences on this comic. In some ways, it's much more culturally diverse, but actually they've produced something that's much more traditional in many ways than what's being produced by a load of white guys, which is also interesting.
Mm.
Should we move on to the next thing that we discuss?
Yeah.
Which is artwork.
Mm.
Now, we chose... I say we.
You.
I chose this as our next episode based upon the fact that we were looking at the artwork on our last issue, which was an issue of Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Issue, I want to say 273 off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. 273, I've got it here.
Mm-hmm.
Which was also drawn by John Buscema.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit within that about the difference between breakdowns on layouts and finished inks.
Mm-hmm.
And how the art could change a lot from one artist to another. Mm. And that was something we really... I chose this issue because we were quite interested in talking about that.
Mm.
And this is the same artist, but with a very different inker.
Mm.
And I want us to start, darling, and I'll put this up. If you look on our blogspot, so it's...
Oh, yeah.
Shouldilovethis.blogspot.com. And then we look at the first page of each issue side by side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, very different. Both of them are rooms. So Conan is kicking through a door into a hovel, kind of a peasant's hovel.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first page of The Avengers, Hercules is carrying a table in a bar with lots of people sat on it.
Mm.
So the similarity is they're both in rooms, but they're very different rooms, you know, different ideas of room.
Mm.
But what I wanted to talk about from the point of view of the difference with the finishing... is the difference in how wood has been depicted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same artist drawing wooden things on both comics.
Mm.
So Conan's kicking through a wooden door.
Mm-hmm.
And Hercules is holding up a wooden table. Mm. And in the background, there's a wooden bar. You know, a very traditional bar where it's wood and then it's got like the bronze-coloured foot rail.
Mm-hmm.
With the stools in front of it. So they're both showing you wood, and they do it in very different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and John Buscema is an artist. He would have drawn it in one way. but they've interpreted it very differently. Mm. And I think that's very interesting. You know, both of them have added a lot of shadow, they've added tone, they're drawing your attention to different things.
Mm-hmm.
But they've done it in such different ways. Mm. You know, Tom Palmer uses a lot of special effects, so he uses like a grey tone screen that he'd put on, like a dot screen. Can you see? There's lots of little tiny dots there.
Yeah.
And he will use those a lot to create the idea of greyness.
Mm.
Whereas Ernie Chan is showing greyness by lots and lots of lines.
Mm.
And you can see the lines with a brush or a pen that have got like real texture going through them.
Mm.
Even in the background there, where he's kind of like making it grey, it's entirely done with dots and lines.
Mm.
And some of the things they do are very similar, which shows that they are working with the same artist.
Mm.
Both of them make the main character have fewer lines on it than the stuff around them. You know, they're drawing your attention to it because it's the plainest part of it. So Hercules has got comparatively fewer lines on him than the stuff around him.
Okay.
And the same I would say with Conan.
Okay.
Yeah, he's drawn simpler than the wood.
Okay.
Which draws your eye to him. And obviously some of that's done by the colouring and stuff.
Okay.
But I think you get a really different way of doing texture. What do you think?
I definitely see what you mean about Hercules.
Hmm.
Yeah, I guess...
I mean, ultimately, what the finisher is adding is the texture. So what John Buscema does is he draws everything, but he's got no light on shade in there. He's just got the outline.
It's not important in the Hercules one what the table is made of, I guess.
No.
If you thought that the table that...
I suppose it could have been a metallic table. Let's do a different contrast then. Let's compare to page 20.
That's what I thought it was.
So page 20 in the Avengers issue, we actually have someone smashing through a wooden door. So two images by the same artist of someone smashing through a door. We can see the similarities, the broken wood with the figure going through. Mm-hmm. But you can see a very different texture used.
Mm.
Obviously, it's a smaller image there. It's not comparing. Mm, mm. But I think you get more of an idea of what they're bringing to it. They've got different ways of doing texture.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see. Mm. I can see that. But I think that if the table had been broken or...
Oh, it was broken. Sorry.
There.
Yeah, on page 2. Do you not remember? So there you go. The table breaks.
Okay.
But so, again, it looks very, very different. I think the textures are very different.
The textures are very different, and I think...
And they give different emphasis. I think if we then move on to, like, page 2 and 3 on both comics, comics do something that John Buscema's very good at.
I prefer.
Is they're both very good at characterization. So... Mm. The scene in the bar, he's got people with, like, odd faces, like, more kind of ordinary people.
Mm.
Not everyone's a superhero.
Mm.
And then within the Conan story, he's got, like, these kind of idiosyncratic characters. You know, you've got the very beautiful Annika, but then Keeve and Simeon and Caleb are very different kinds of faces.
They are.
Different body types.
Yeah.
And he clearly, the artist, John Buscema, obviously loves drawing different body types. But the inkers texturise them in very different ways. You know, if you look at those faces there that are really quite different.
Yes.
And compare them to how these ones are done. It's just that a different sort of like style.
The Conan one on page three. Picture 2 and 5, 6.
He's counting panels.
Yeah. And the last one.
Yeah.
I think they're quite traditional in their sort of like, I mean, it could almost be, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of 1930s. drawing, couldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of that just comes from John Buscema being a very traditional artist.
Modern, and I think so because the Hercules is a modern story.
So you're seeing the setting difference more than the art difference.
Yeah, and I'm thinking because of the setting difference, I think that they've kind of drawn things kind of differently because people obviously...
But I think as well, what you're not getting from is the point I'm trying to make about the difference of a finisher is part of the reason they've chosen Ernie Chen to be the finisher for Conan is because he's good at that kind of texture.
Okay.
And part of the reason they've chosen Tom Palmer for the Avengers is he's good at that more kind of contemporary Sheen kind of effect. You know, and I think you really do see it. There's a real characterization on both within the characters of the faces and the background. You know, the odd faces. But Tom Palmer's much more naturalistic in his use of lines. He's trying to create light and dark in a very natural, you know, all the lights coming from the same direction. Whereas I think with Ernie Chan, it's more about atmosphere. It's more about texture. So even in those panels across the middle of page 3, where you see the three characters, you see Keeve, you see Simeon, you see Caleb. Now, the background item, the tree, runs through two of the panels. And actually they overlap, so you can see that it's meant to be one scene.
Oh yeah, I hadn't noticed that.
But all the characters are lit in a different way. So what Tom Palmer would have done there is he would have said, well, the sun's coming from this direction, so all the shadows are that way. He's always quite literal with his use of shadow and light.
From that way.
And I think Ernie Chan is much, much more, you know, Keeve, he's deceptive and he's sneaky. So he's got more shadow on his face than the other characters. You know, particularly Caleb, who's meant to be like trying to be a holy man, but actually keeps being a destroyer. He looks much lighter, much more open. There's less shadow on him. But they're stood in a line. They should all have the same shadow on them.
Okay.
You know, so it's about how the style influences it. And what John Buscema will have done is he'll have just drawn outlines, indications of what their faces look like. And then your finisher decides how to draw that. You know, and sometimes it's most notable, I think, in things that are very similar. So if you look at the texture within the hair, you know, of how the curls that Annika's got, how curly hair is kind of indicated by, like, smudging blackness. And then, you know, I know it's a lighter coloured hair, but it's lots of small lines to create curly hair on the woman in the bar.
Okay.
In the Avengers. So they're using different techniques to do the same thing. And it really changes the whole feel of the art.
Okay.
And that's what I find fascinating about the whole layouts versus finishes, is that the whole texture, the whole feeling of it can be changed. Now, obviously, both Tom Palmer and Ernie Chan are great artists. You know, they're both capable. We know with the Avengers one that it was actually fully drawn, the cover was fully drawn by Tom Palmer. He could draw by himself. He doesn't need to be an inker. Ernie Chan can also do that. He's a great artist. And he spent many, many years working more as a penciler than as an inker. He had a big run for DC in the late 70s, where he was doing, like, Batman stories and, like, loads of covers and stuff. Great artist. They can do it all. So what they do is they really bring texture and definition to it. And I think they both do it brilliantly, but in really different ways. And I think that's really fascinating from an art viewpoint. I don't know if you feel that, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, no, I see. So, like, I see what you mean.
And there's no doubt that the art in this book really works. It's really good.
Yeah.
And that's because John Buscema is good. Whoever inks John Buscema, it looks good. And it looks great, I think, because of who's in it. And I think it's very well suited. The Ernie Channiness of it, if I want to say that, which sounds ridiculous, is really suited to the setting. It gives a texture, it gives a griminess. You know, the way that he uses shadow on the tree actually there.
Mm.
You know, on page three. The way he adds, like, a shadow to the tavern where the villains are.
Mm.
You know, it just gives it so much character.
Mm, mm.
That really does, you know, add a texture to the whole thing.
Mm.
I would say, you know, again, for me, I gave it 5 out of 5 on artwork. What you gave, darling?
I'm going to give it, yeah, 5 out of 5.
So another high one. We were quite high last time. I think this looks amazing. It's really, really beautifully drawn. Again, I would recommend going to shouldilovethis.blogspot.com, where I will share pictures from this issue. They're not going to be the best looking pictures because the copy of this I've got is very ropey. It's very... It's been through the wars, hasn't it, darling?
Yeah.
But you can still see the art. It looks wonderful. So the next thing we normally score is characterisation.
Yeah.
And we've kind of talked about this a bit within accessibility, so I don't want to spend too long on it.
Mm.
But we did say you know who the characters are, you know why they're doing what they're doing and what they're doing.
Mm.
And for that, I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
What do you think? Were you convinced by the characters? Did they seem to be acting?
Yeah. Yeah, they seemed... It probably helps that they weren't flying and doing other ridiculous things.
One of the characters was on a flying horse.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but he's batty, though.
He is magic.
Yeah, sort of like I felt that the action was real. You felt that they were doing real fighting.
I mean, the thing that really got to me characterisation-wise, and I think was a very interesting choice, particularly knowing how the comic is put together. Mm. So I mentioned that it was plotted by Christopher Priest and John Buscema, that they co-plotted it.
Uh-huh.
And that was how they worked together on Conan while they were working together.
Mm.
So apparently what they would do is they'd get together, they'd have a discussion of the issue, John Buscema would draw it, then he'd put the dialogue in afterwards.
Mm. Mm.
So some of the writing is being done by the artist,
mm.
which again I think sometimes makes it better than when they're just following a plot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it means that the writing is there in the art all the way through.
Mm.
And one of the most interesting bits of characterization for me is the last page. Well, the last few pages.
Mm.
Where Conan finds out, he gets that hint from Ibn that the boy was under his feet, and he realises there must be a basement in that hovel they were in.
Mm.
And he must have been down there all the time, and they could have found his body and buried it right from the start.
Mm.
And he rushes, and people are asking him questions and trying to talk to him, and he just walks out silently and goes to find the body, cut the boy down, and then cradles him in his arms.
Mm.
And what I find fascinating about that is they leave it to your decision what has happened. There are not words on that last page.
Right.
In fact, I don't think there's any words at all on the last few. Apart from him saying, he says Jarlie. So they identified the boy. But yeah, on the last page, he just says the name of the boy. He says Jarlie and cuts him down, and then he holds him.
Mm.
And he's in shadow.
Mm.
And you can't tell what he's doing. Now, I read it as he was crying.
Okay.
Well, he could be crying.
Mm.
It could be intensely emotional.
Mm.
It could be he's defeated. It could be he's sad, but he's not going as far as crying.
Mm.
They give you a certain amount of making your mind up on it. Mm. And I think that's a very interesting thing to do with characterization.
Mm.
And it's something that a comic can do in many ways that's harder to do on film. It's much harder to do in a novel.
Mm.
Because you're describing often someone's inner thoughts. Whereas you can frame somebody in a comic where you can't see their eyes.
Mm.
And because you haven't got a camera moving, you don't like accidentally see a bit. You see nothing.
Mm.
And, you know, I think he feels genuine sympathy and care for that child that's there.
Mm.
But I also think that he's personally affected.
Yeah, I think...
But that's a choice, yeah. You know, and that's a characterisation thing. And that's why I like the characterisation. That was one of the things I love, because it's there in the art as well as in what's written. You know.
Personally, I would have liked the boy to have been underneath the floorboards, but because I think it's a bit unlikely that such a hovel would have a cellar. But
I don't know. I mean, it's meant to be in the past, isn't it? It's an imaginary past, but it's a past.
So, and also, but then what I, that's really grim. Is that blood on that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really grim. But should we tell them that I thought there were two bodies?
Well, he saw the shadow and thought there were two. You probably shouldn't mention that. But no, what would you score it for characterisation? I mean, that was just a thing I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
That really got to me from characterisation and actually makes me wonder, should I give it 5 out of 5 instead of 4? But I'm going to stick with 4 because, I don't know, I don't want to give it 5 out of 5 for too many things. It feels a bit overly generous.
Mm.
What would you go with for the characterisation? I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever that the characters are complex.
Yeah.
And particularly Conan is complex. You know, that he's incredibly violent, but he's also incredibly sympathetic.
Mm. Let's give it, just to be controversial, 4.
So we're both going 4 there, so that's an 8. Then we got the cover.
Oh.
Which is actually separate from the comic book in this case, which isn't often true, and has a great big fold down it. You're all going to love the pictures of this when you go and look on the Blogspot.
Oh yeah, it does have
a great it's got a great big fold on it. So this cover out of 5. Let's talk first about my favourite thing about this. And I mentioned this before. Mm-hmm. I mentioned it right at the start when I was doing the credits.
Mm-hmm.
The logo here is by Gaspar Saladino. This, to my mind, is the best Conan the Barbarian logo. It is amazing. It really, really works. There's something about the texture of the letters. And then having the word The Barbarian written on a sword. And this one, it first appeared in issue 12 of this series, so it's really been running a long time, by issue 188. And it's just one of the best designed logos. And Gaspar Saladino is known as one of the greatest logo designers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He worked for DC initially, mainly starting in the 60s, doing cover design, cover lettering and logos. And he did so many of the great logos, particularly for DC. But then in the 70s, he did a bit of work for Marvel. And I just think it's amazing. I think it looks fantastic. And then the blood red on that with the yellow. And then the red background and Conan's wearing a yellow helmet in the picture.
Would it have been really blood red originally?
Well, they change the colour all the time, so it's lots of different colours.
No, I see that as a kind of salmon, but maybe that's just mine.
Oh, I think that's red.
Is it? Okay.
I suppose, yeah, it's a pinky red.
Yeah.
We could go with that.
Okay.
But the actual image, the picture of Conan, so all of these are headshots, and this one's slightly different from the others that we've done so far.
It has no neck.
Because he's got no neck, it's literally just his head. And there's some discussion as to who drew this.
Okay.
Now, we know it's John Buscema. Definitely John Buscema. You can see his style there. But there is different sources claim different inkers. So I've seen people claim it was inked by John Buscema himself. I've seen people claim it was inked by Ernie Chan, who did the interior. I don't think it was Ernie Chan. I don't think it looks like his work. But I don't know who it is. I don't think it's John Buscema inking either, but I can't quite put my finger on it. There's something about the lines on the helmet that look wrong for being inked by John Buscema. John Buscema used to use quite kind of thick brush strokes that were very squared off. And that looks like pen work that's very thin. I don't know. I can't quite judge who inked it, and I can't find a definitive answer.
Am I thinking about this too hard? Probably. But his helmet is quite similar to the Destroyer.
In some ways. I mean, what's interesting about this cover is the helmet he's wearing is not the helmet he wears in the story.
Oh.
The helmet he wears in the story covers more of his face, because a real helmet that you're going to fight an army in has to partly cover your face.
Yes.
And there's a feeling for me, and again, I don't know how much this is true and how much of this is just in my head, but there's a feeling to me that this is like a pre-existing piece of art that's been turned into the cover.
Oh, okay.
Because it doesn't feel like it was specifically created for this issue.
No, yeah, I can see.
It's a very different helmet, yeah. Isn't it? We've just opened up the splash panel where he's wearing his armour, and you can see it's very different. The other thing that makes me think it wasn't designed to be the cover initially is it's drawn by John Buscema.
Mm.
And at that period in time, John Buscema was not doing Conan covers.
Mm.
So the covers, both before and immediately afterwards, are drawn entirely by Ernie Chan. Mm. So for there to be a Conan, I don't know, that just feels like a picture that he drew, or a sketch that they found.
But then they are in the arena.
So. No, not in the book, in the cover. We're talking about the cover.
Oh, sorry.
I think the cover might be a sketch, like a little character sketch or something that he did.
Maybe.
That they then got inked and turned into a cover.
Why would they do that, though?
Maybe it was to do with the fact that they were a bit late knowing that they had to have the headshots.
Okay.
Maybe the issue that was going to have the headshot on the cover changed. Mm. So maybe they changed the order of some of the comics.
Mm.
I genuinely don't know. I don't know. But it doesn't feel like it belongs with the other ones. You know, the other covers we've done so far? They've always had their shoulders attached to them. There's always been an element of it being a particular style of cover they were doing.
I can see that.
Whereas this feels like they found an image they already had that would kind of fit with the theme. Maybe there was another image drawn and they didn't have time to fully start again and they just found that old image.
He looks similar though, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's definitely the same character design. You know, John Buscema draws Conan the same from like the first time he draws a Conan comic book, which is about 1972.
Okay.
Until the last time he draws a Conan comic book, which is a couple of years before he died in the noughties. You know, he kept going back to Conan. It was a thing he loved drawing. He loves that. John Buscema always used to talk in interviews and stuff about he didn't really like drawing things in the modern day.
Right.
Because it had to be real. And he found that hard work, whereas he could just draw from his imagination. Which actually isn't entirely true. I mean, in this comic, there's lots of really good pictures of horses. You know, you can't just draw a horse from your imagination. I mean, a winged horse, yes, which you're looking at right this very moment.
But yeah.
There are actual just horses. Horses are difficult to draw. But obviously he found that easier to draw than like trucks and rooftops and all that kind of stuff. He preferred to draw out of his imagination, is what he would always say. And I think that's there. But yeah, that cover, I don't know, it just doesn't feel quite right to me. And even though it's by an artist who I love, I scored it quite low, maybe too low. I gave it a 2 out of 10.
Oh, okay.
I didn't... There's things I love. I love the logo. I love the colour on the logo. I think that, and the background colour works well. But I don't know, I don't like the face. I think his hair looks weird. I wonder, you know, again, you know, maybe it's a John Buscema sketch they had that they found and they blew it up. And someone else inked it. And it isn't actually a piece of art that he drew at that size. And that's why, but it just doesn't quite feel... I don't know. But it's me. But I'm giving it 2 out of 5. What are you giving it, darling?
I think it's probably quite... I don't know.
I mean, it's not a bad image.
No, I mean, you can see...
He does also look as though he's very angry with Captain America because he's looking directly at him.
You can see kind of... what's the word? Wind and weather. But there's no... As you say, there's no real context. The logo, so, you know, as you said, sort of like the logo kind of... If you didn't know who or what Conan the Barbarian was, you kind of got the idea that it was kind of, so, you know, the olden times.
It's so sword and sorcery, isn't it? Yeah. You just know you've got sword and sorcery from that logo. And actually, I suppose you do from the image as well.
The letters are kind of, you know, they're not rounded off or they're not polished or they're not, so, you know, they're kind of stone, so, you know, maybe, or... it's a clever logo. And I like little parts of the main drawing. I like the part where they've clearly not forgotten to add another stud or another.
I mean, the helmet is quite well inked in many ways. I think my issues are more with the hair and elements of the face. It just feels like, and maybe this is coming off that, you know, I was talking about layouts versus finishes. It feels like somebody's taken an incredibly rough John Buscema drawing.
Okay.
And turned it into a cover. And actually, you know, his covers tended to be something he would pencil quite completely. You know, more so than an interior, because it wasn't just about to... I mean, a cover's important.
So what are you giving it out of five?
You're going to be more generous than me, I think.
Three.
It's not a favourite.
For the logo, mainly.
I mean, that logo is amazing. I love Gaspar Saladino. He was someone who... I knew his, like, lettering within comics. So, like, he lettered lots of different comics. And I knew his stuff. And I didn't always appreciate it. And it wasn't until... There's a blog, and I've referenced it before, by a letterer called Todd Klein. And it's called Klein Letters. And he does, like, reviews of logos and stuff. And he's very into the history of logos. I mean, he's a logo designer himself, so it's interesting. But he's done a lot of coverage of Gaspar Saladino, who would always just credited as Gaspar most of the time. And... it really makes you appreciate what he did. You know, seeing behind the scenes and seeing alternatives and, you know, he had a real style and it was a real... Prior to him coming into DC Comics, everything was very Art Deco. It was very old-fashioned and often beautiful. But he just really jolted up the system. And then, obviously, we came to a point where everyone's reacting against what he did. But he did some amazing work, and I think this is one of his best. So at that point, we are on 33 out of 40.
Gosh.
But our last section is acceptable in the 80s, and this is where we deduct points for anything we think was like, well, you might have got away with that in 1986, but 2022, nah.
No.
What do you think, darling? Do you think there was anything in here that you have to deduct for?
What do I think? I think there's probably portrayals of certain racial groups that might be a little bit on the knuckle.
I don't... It's a very difficult one to judge. And obviously I'm a white man judging this.
Yeah.
It's fantasy. I know within... There's been certain people have written about racism within the original Conan stories, the Robert E. Howard stories, how there were particular racial groups within that world. You know, apparently the original books had lots of maps and stuff, and it was kind of related to our Earth, but not quite.
Okay.
But they had, like, an equivalent to Africa. They had an equivalent to... Asia, definitely names that are used reference things. You know, there's no doubt that Ibn, you know, that's an Arabic name. It's Middle Eastern. But then he just, he is an assassin and he's a bad guy. But I don't think he's caricatured as Middle Eastern. You could read him as Middle Eastern. But there's none of the, like, weird things you get in comics where, like, the colour of the skin is off or...
Okay.
You know, all the characters in this comic have the same colour skin. They're all... Actually, Conan's got different colour skin. He's, like, redder, like he spent more time outside. But they're all just Caucasian, kind of white-skinned. But then some of the facial types, you think, well, maybe that person could be considered to be a bit Asian, or they're trying to show Eastern European in one character, or but no real gradation of colour. Now, that's quite possibly a good thing, because comics could... I mean, they really could tend towards, you know, somebody who's Japanese would be coloured yellow, and somebody who's Middle Eastern is coloured grey, and somebody who... There really were, like, these kinds of racist tropes within that. And I'm sure the fact, you know, we've talked about how diverse the people making this comic were. The fact that the editor is a Japanese-American man means that you're unlikely to see a character who's Japanese or coded as Japanese, coloured in a way that's offensive or with, like, a really offensive eye shape or, you know... There was none of that. It's all very middle of the road in that sense. And actually much more progressive than a lot of stuff you see.
Okay.
And everybody feels, and this is down to the art, I think, feels like an individual person that could exist.
Yeah.
They don't look like caricatures. Even though there's a certain amount, you know, there's one guy's much shorter and fatter, and one guy's much thinner, and one guy's more built. I suppose there's caricaturing in that, but they look like real, genuine examples of that. That they've been drawn by people who've looked at people. And I don't think any of the bad qualities of the character Ibn are related to him having a Middle Eastern name.
No.
You know, in the same way as... Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could find to give it that maybe you could equate... I mean, it's overly violent, obviously.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think that's stuck in the 80s. I think people like violence. And it's interesting to me, though, that that kind of level of violence is kind of acceptable in a comic in the 80s. Whereas things to do with sex or sexuality or racism weren't dealt with at that time. That is interesting. But no, the only thing I think you could really say is Mad Simeon is the name of a character. That he's called Mad Simeon. He's not called Simeon.
Yeah.
And this kind of idea. But again, he's called Mad Simeon. And there's referencing as to him going into, like, being a bit wild and crazy in that sense. But it's not related to mental ill health. You know, he's very bright. He's the one who does the fake, you know, being beaten up by the guy. And he's shown as being funny, and he's shown as being sly and sneaky. And, you know, he's not a caricature of ill mental health.
No.
But I think there is an issue about calling a character mad. But it's done in quite a good way, particularly for the time. You know, a lot of people, if they were known as Mad X or Mad, you know, Mad Irrigal, in a comic at that time, would have been an incredibly offensive stereotype of Mad a mentally Max. Ill person. Well, I suppose in some ways he's more like a Mad Max, actually.
Then Mad Max is mad because he's angry.
Yeah, so maybe it is that kind of mad, and maybe I'm being unkind. I don't know. I feel like I couldn't decide how many points to take off.
Cause is it kind of lost in translation that maybe Americans...
Yeah, because of the Mad Max thing. There's part of me that thinks...
Mad as in...
Don't take anything off at all.
Yeah.
And then there's part of me that thinks I should take off one. And I can't quite decide. And I actually wrote down a question mark for the first time ever.
Ooh.
I didn't decide before we started talking.
Okay.
What did you think? Would you take anything off? Would you say there were things in here that shouldn't have been in here, that we should have changed?
No.
No.
Not that were making me squirm.
There was nothing surprisingly offensive.
No.
And there have been comics that I love more that we've covered on this.
Maybe.
That have had incredibly racist character names.
Maybe we could...
Maybe it's one between the two of us taken off.
Yeah. Maybe we could take away a point for the only woman in it not doing an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it fails the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
The only woman who's there is talking about both her ex-boyfriend and her son.
Yeah.
So it definitely fails the Bechdel test. But then again, you know...
She's not doing any fighting, she's relying...
And she's not doing anything bad. She's made a mistake. The start of the story is she made a mistake.
She had an affair.
She didn't... Well, no, it was more she didn't trust them.
Okay.
Because they were a bit of an odd group of people.
Yeah.
So she sent her son away because she thought he'd be safer away from those people. And actually he was put at risk. So she has made a mistake. But I haven't read very many Conan stories.
No.
But I've read, I've got something like 10 Conan comics in my
collection. Maybe our listeners can.
And I would say in 9 out of those 10 comics... The villain is the woman.
Oh, okay.
And actually, compared to other Conan I've read, these are incredibly kind to the female characters.
Okay.
Because often the female characters are presented as they're trying to sway Conan with sex. And he has to defeat them and they're really a villain or they're really trying to manipulate him. You know, and there's lots of, like, scantily clad ladies, like, dancing. And it's all very kind of traditional sword and sorcery. Quite sexist at times. And this isn't. Now, I don't know if it's just one issue it isn't. And the following issue, you know. And I know Conan had multiple titles this period. And one of the titles, which at certain times was drawn by John Buscema, was called Savage Sword of Conan, which was an adults-only comic. Mm. And they used to take any excuse they could to get tits into it. So, you know, and Conan, many of those tits were drawn by John Buscema, who's co-plotting and drawing this. And I know that was part of it, part of the reason the women were the villains. Is because you got to draw like a scantily clad woman trying to seduce someone. And that's appealing to straight men.
And of course Grace Jones was a villain in
films. She was, wasn't she, in one of the films.
It all comes back to Grace Jones.
And obviously you can also argue, well, Conan's pretty scantily clad most of the time.
He is, not that we object.
Well, in this comic he was relatively covered up comparatively.
Oh, is he?
There's a lot of Conan, I mean, the corner box image, he's just wearing like a pair of furry knickers. Oh. But actually he's got a shirt on for most of this book. And then when he puts on armour, he's fully covered up. I know, it's shocking, isn't it? But, yeah, maybe we do take off one between us, or two, one each.
Half each.
One for the woman and one for the...
Yeah.
No, let's take off one.
One.
So we end up with 32 out of 40, which again makes it one of the best.
Ooh.
We've had a good run, and I think what's helping is that a lot of our score comes down to artwork. And we've had 2 John Buscemas in a row. This didn't do as badly. Sorry, this didn't do as well as the last issue. The last issue got 37 out of 40, so it's still our best.
Okay.
But we got 32 out of 40 for this one.
Okay.
For looking at Conan.
Yes.
So I suppose the question, should I love this comic? Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I guess the question is, which is which is only a question we can do today, is would you have loved this comic in 1987, whenever you could have bought it?
I would have enjoyed it.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
It's very hard to tell.
Mm.
You know, I very much enjoyed comics that were superhero. And okay. The fact that it wasn't superhero would have set it slightly off for me.
Okay.
That would have been, you know, in 1986 when I was 12 and I was reading these comics.
Mm.
The fact that it wasn't superhero would have slightly brought it down in my estimation.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
But I think I would have enjoyed it. I don't know if I would have been like, I have to buy every issue.
Okay.
But then the other side is, when I saw Conan comics, I often bought them.
Mm.
Particularly if they looked well drawn. You know, I'm drawn more to the art in comics than the writing. I like them to be well written. But the thing that drives me on as a comics fan is art. And, you know, you always get good art from John Buscema. You're not getting a bad comic book if he drew it.
No.
Even if it's badly inked. And he did get badly inked at times because he was doing quite rough pencils. It was always good enough. So, yeah, I would probably have bought more issues of this. I think it's a shame that the old Conan stuff is not on Marvel Unlimited.
Is it not?
No, and the new stuff isn't either, but okay. Marvel are doing Conan again now, and something to do with their contract with the Conan people, because obviously it's not owned by Marvel, it's a licensed book, because Conan is a set of novels that started in the 30s.
Okay.
It's like an older property.
So they would have had to.
Yeah, they kind of have to license it. And unlike a lot of the licensed comics that Marvel now do, are licenses that are also owned by Disney, who own Marvel.
Right.
So, you know, when they're doing a comic about Star Wars, it's owned by the same company. You know, or they do a comic about... I can't think of any examples now because I'm being really stupid. But, you know, they're owned by the same people. They now own Aliens, so they're doing Alien comics again. Because they bought out whoever owned Aliens, I can't remember. But, you know, Marvel are doing the Aliens and stuff. But, yeah, there's something about the Conan where they can't just print everything. They can't just put it all on Marvel Unlimited.
Right.
I think something to do with how the money changes. If they did, I would definitely go and read more of these comics. Because these are good. I've read Christopher Priest before. He's a good writer. These are good, well-written comics. They're co-written by and drawn by one of the greatest comic artists of all time. You know... They are, I imagine they are all quite good. And I think particularly that run would be good. You know, to go back to their first issue together and read it through. There's clearly, you know, from looking at where the characters lie, there's a story being told with this group of characters. Which is interesting. Because, again, a lot of the Conan stories I've read are like one-offs. So it's like Conan wanders into somewhere, something happens... He wanders off at the end of the story. Conan can be a bit Littlest Hobo in that way. You know, or like the old Incredible Hulk TV series or something. Anyway, I think we've come to the end, haven't we?
We have, yes.
So, next issue... I'm not going to say what we're going to do next because I haven't decided.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yes, we'll go somewhere else. We're going to do something different to Conan.
Okay.
Which is almost anything that Marvel published, so that's fine.
Lovely.
So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very
again
much.
As we always say, you know, check out our blogspot, shouldilovethis.blogspot.com. I'd love it if people were to give comments, let us know what they think of it.
We would.
Anyway, thank you very much and speak to you all soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye.